You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Theater fans, one and all, welcome back to the We Are Theater podcast. And we've packed our bags once again and we've headed back to Gander because Come From Away is coming to Sydney. Actually, by the time you guys are listening to this, previews will have started. So get your tickets because we'll touch on that later on where you can get them. But today we are talking to Emma Powell, who plays Beulah and others in CFA Australia. Hey, Emma, how are you going?
I'm very well, Josh. How are you?
I am fantastic. I'm so excited to be talking about Come From Away again.
I know. Isn't it wonderful?
Such a fantastic show. And for anyone who hasn't seen the Australian tour yet, last chance. Get your tickets because you are not going to want to miss this whatsoever. Emma, do you want to give us a quick rundown on Beulah?
So Beulah is, she's actually, the character in the show is a real person. I mean, they're all real people in the show from Gander and Come From Away, but she's actually made, there's actually two women who have become the Beulah that I play. So, but Beulah in Gander, she runs the Gander Academy, which is the school. And she basically, it's where I think she has 700 people in her school on the basketball court, in the classrooms and in the cafeteria. And she's kind of like that person that when there's a problem or you're in crisis, who will just make you food and who will sit you down and get you a cup of tea. You know, she's that, she's the maternal kind of that, that the womb of the place, if you get my drift. So it's sort of, she's that person you go to for a hug or to, and to have something organized. So, and she's pretty, you know, she loves a good joke. She's not real good at them, but you know, she's just one salt of the earth, you know, everybody's auntie. Do you know what I mean? It's like, or grandma basically, showing my age, but, yeah, she's one of those really good country folk, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. You mentioned real people, and you've actually got to meet the people that this character is based off. So a bit different from regular musicals where it's usually text or historical figures.
Yes.
What's it like to actually get to pick the brains of these people who went through this to help develop that character?
It was wonderful and strange and daunting and awesome all at the same time. Normally, you know, when you opening night in a show is the most nerve-wracking or nervous that you'll be. But the night that they all came, they arrived in Melbourne. This was originally when we opened it. They arrived in Melbourne a few days before and we hadn't met them yet. And then we found out they were in the preview that night. And we were beside ourselves. We were so nervous and we were so anxious and also excited to have them in the audience. And they came on stage afterwards, which wasn't going to happen, but they did anyway. It was just wonderful. And that's where I met Beulah and Diane, who Beulah is based on. And it was kind of like everything clicked into place in terms of the script and the score and the work that, you know, we'd been doing on our characters. It was like everything went, oh, right, okay, I see. You know, it was, and it was kind of, as I said, it was just kind of like meeting my auntie or meeting a mate or, you know, just really, they went to the New York opening, they went to the London opening, they've been everywhere, you know, they're kind of stars, you know, they're absolute stars back home in particular in Newfoundland, but they're just so grounded, wonderful. And you know, I love a drink. Who doesn't? And we're just like, we've got to open in a week, we can't keep coming out with you. But yeah, just really, really great people. And yeah, very, it was daunting. It was really, really daunting. Yeah.
Did you pick up on anything after meeting them? Did you change anything subtly, or do you have a pretty good representation? Like, did those conversations click anything into place where you just slightly adapted the way you presented something?
Not really. I think, you know, with the 6 weeks of rehearsals that we'd done with the creative team, you know, they asked us to interpret these roles ourselves. Like, you know, they said, we're not doing a version of these people. So at its core, we had the core values and the core ideas really solid by the time we hit the stage. So it really just confirmed what we'd done for the last 6 weeks, really. It just in terms of, you know, my own thought process of where it was coming from, I guess that just solidified that a little bit. But certainly nothing changed as such. It was all very, it was all pretty solid. And, you know, the creative team, I mean, they're incredible and they've been working on this show for such a long time. Yeah. They get it, you know. But they did say, you're not doing an interpretation. You're not doing them. You're not playing them. You are doing your interpretation of this character within this show that's come from a real person. So it's, it just sort of solidified that we're all, and that we were on the right track, and that I was on the right track too. That was really nice. Yeah.
What was your experience with Come From Away prior to being cast and starting to rehearse the show?
Absolutely nothing. I had no idea what it was. someone had said to me, I think maybe a year before auditions came out, they'd heard that it was coming and they went, oh, you should go for Come From Away. And I went, great, no idea what you're talking about, but I'll look out for it. And then when I heard that it was a show, you know, Canadian, I thought, and it's got an accent that isn't just Canadian. And I thought to myself, oh, well, it'll be like French-Canadian, right? I had no idea that there was this place, northeastern tip of Canada that had Irish in there. I had no idea. And so when the brief came out and, you know, they sent some information on the accent, and I was just, what's happening? In my brain, I was like, I don't understand this, which everybody felt pretty much. And even I went to a dialect coach for the auditions, and she'd never had to do a Gander accent, so or Newfoundland accent, so she had to research it. And you can't just type into YouTube Newfoundland accent, right? So it doesn't come up. So in that sense, and I had no idea what the story was either. And it was such a beautiful, beautiful story, because I had researched that, obviously. And it kind of just reminded me of, you know, what we do as a community during bushfires here and floods and things like that. It was a very similar, had that sort of the generosity. And but I also was a bit like a 9/11 story. Huh. How's it going to go here? You know,
the elevator pitch, a lot of people hear, and that's what detects for buying tickets. They're like, oh, 9/11?
Yeah, a bit dark. No.
That type of story. It's definitely the... There's obviously, we have to tell the story of what actually happened and why these but it's more about the community and the sharing the love side of things than the
It's more of a universal theme. 9/11 is simply the context in which this happened. It's a bit like Les Mis, it's the French Revolution, for example. Yeah. You know, like these stories of these people, they could happen in any context. You can put, you know, as I said, it could be a bushfire, it could be a flood, it could be so. But as you say, the elevator pitch, and I think that's why this show does so well once we're into the run of the show, because it's such a word of mouth show. Because people might say, oh, 9/11, not sure about that, but people come to the show and then they bring people back, and then they, you know, it's like this, and it just starts to build, and the audiences get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and
it's caught in it, and it just spreads.
And it's quite funny. Like, it's a funny, like, there's a lot of humor in this show, and people go, what? And you go, yeah, I know, but also as Aussies, that's how we cope too, right? Like, we do, we're really good at sort of you know, joking to get ourselves through a difficult crisis and difficult situation. Yeah. So it does enjoy a good long run, so that we can sort of build that word of mouth, and, you know, people just keep coming back and bringing people. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting the 9/11 side of things, what was your personal experience? What did you remember from that going into the room and having to kind of relive all of that?
Well, I was doing Mamma Mia in Melbourne, and it was a Tuesday night. My daughter was being looked after by my sister at her house because my husband at the time was in Sydney doing a show. So I was on my way home to pick her up via my sister's, and I had the radio on, and there was something on there about something had happened in New York. I thought, oh, I don't know what's happening. Picked her up, got home, turned the telly on. It was Sandra Sully, and, you know, the Twin Towers were burning. Well, only one at that point. I rang my husband at the time, and he said to me, the Pentagon's had a plane gone into it. I said, darling, that's the World Trade Center. It's not the Pentagon. And he said, no, it's the Pentagon. I said, it's not. We were there a few years ago, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he'd been watching another station, obviously.
Yeah.
And then up came the double thing of the Pentagon. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it's both. So when we went into the rehearsal room, we spent a morning or an afternoon or even the whole day sort of talking about our 9/11 experiences. And we had a couple of actors from the US who were in the room, and their experience was quite different to ours, obviously. They were quite young at the time, but it's still incredibly, like, one of our actors couldn't get onto his auntie. They didn't know where, like, and it really was that thing of, what are we at war? What's happening? And I think there was quite a lot of emotion in the room, and we talked about it because it was, it changed the world.
Yeah,
you know, it changed the world, and our response, the West's response to it, changed the world as we know it. And so we did spend quite a lot of time talking about that response and the fear that it kind of instilled in us, that it had touched us that way. Because I think, you know, the West, we'd been fairly untouched, you know, and then suddenly there we were. But so, yeah, we did spend quite a bit of time talking about that, because that is such an important part of the piece, is about people's vulnerability at the time and how, you know, communication went down. They didn't know why they were flying in. They didn't know, like, most people didn't know what was happening. They're like, we've heard something, but we don't know what it is. And then how that then translated to how they dealt, like, yeah, quite a deep conversation about that time. Yeah.
And I feel like that is kind of why the show, like, you could see this show in London, in New York and Australia and get a slightly different interpretation, because the story means different things over the world because of the way people perceived it, obviously through media, but also distance and everything like that. The actors felt different things and bring that to the stage differently. So something I hadn't thought about with this show. That's definitely interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Getting to share the different perspectives on stage of this story, though, because it's not just Bueller's, it's the other minor characters that you flip between throughout the show. Getting to flip those scenes and play multiple characters sharing this story, what's that like, getting to flip between characters?
Well, I mean, now it's sort of, it's in the body, it's muscle memory, it's mind memory, it just sort of clicks. But originally, yeah, we had to really sort of embody, you know, one moment you're embodying one character having a certain response, and then next thing, like seconds later, you're embodying a different character. So, yeah, we really had to shift that focus. And often it didn't work. Like, you know, I play my two, Bueller, who is my main, I spend most of my time as Bueller, into Dolores, which is a New York woman at the back of the plane who created quite the hubbub. And there was literally a person who had claustrophobia and created quite a lot of hubbub on her plane. And that's me. So, and I remember in the dialogue, I just couldn't do the New York accent. I just kept going into the Irish, you know, Newfoundlander accent instead of, you know, the sort of New York accent. So Yeah, really, I don't shift as much as others. There's a couple of people in the show who shift quite a lot and spent a lot more time in their secondary character.
Yeah.
And I just, they're incredible how they do it. And also there's like a physical change. Like it's like a, you just change. There's different ways that you can do it. You can do it via accent. You can do it via imagining yourself in that position, or you can make a physical change, which can just change how the role then, is physically in the world.
Yeah.
There was a lot of work to be done from everybody to inhabit those roles. But the show itself, not only in the roles, but we go from direct address to the audience to being in a scene, to direct address to being in a scene to, so there's a lot of, let's say, acting gymnastics, I suppose you'd call it. It's very much, you have to be really sort of pliable and elastic while you're doing it. Yeah.
100%. What's the biggest thing that you, as an actor, have learned through this experience with this show?
Oh, how to let things go. Because, it's live theatre. You're going to make mistakes every now and again, right? You're going to be tired or, you might not fluff a line, but you might trip over something. And we bash ourselves about that. We go, oh, that's no good. But with this show, we just have to keep going. So you have to put, because then otherwise it affects the rest of your performance if you're hanging on to it. In other shows, often you can go off stage, do a costume change, have a bit of a rah moment and let it go. But this show, because we're on stage all the time, you don't have that moment to decompress.
Yeah.
So I've learned a lot about that. I think too, most of the roles I've done have been kind of the funny sidekick or the comedic role. So I've, and Beulah's, quite funny in some moments, but, she's got this, I've sort of been able to, at 53 years of age now, I'm sort of doing more dramatic work, which I really enjoy. So that's been a real focus for me and a challenge as well, because, it's not easy to be funny, but that's kind of my shtick, that's sort of what I've done in the past and that's what I'm known for. But being able to balance that with some really, really nice, I'm not blowing smoke, but, the show itself is a beautiful dramatic piece as well. So to be able to tell that story, and be in the moment, be present. That's the other thing too that I've had to learn. Yeah.
You've got to tour with a ton of amazing shows that have come through Australia. Kinky Boots, which is where we first met. Mamma Mia, you said. Comparing those shows with like audience reactions to Come From Away, what's that like? Like obviously people, the show's great, but I feel like this show has a lasting effect. Like it really makes you think about certain things after you leave. So getting to hear audience reactions and that type of thing, what's that been like?
It's pretty extraordinary actually. I mean, I feel like, the business that I'm in is, can range from being a distraction for people. Like you go in and you get entertained for, a couple of hours and that's great. And then there are other shows or experiences that people have in a show that does change something intrinsically about themselves, or at least a seed will drop in. I mean, Kinky Boots was a little bit like that too. But Come From Away, the responses we've had from audiences are things like people at Stage Door, for example, are things like, I forgot that we can be good as humans. We actually have goodness in us. It's a bit of a me kind of world, so it can be. And I think that it just taps people in. The mask wearing has been difficult, that the audience in Melbourne, this second time round wearing masks, and then again in Brisbane after lockdown. That was difficult because we can see the audience quite a bit during the show because we do direct address and the fourth wall is well and truly kind of down in that respect. And it's amazing how much we can't see in terms of their, we can see eyes, but without the rest of the face, it's been an interesting thing for us in terms of what we can see. But, you know, people just in tears of joy or sadness at certain points, or just moves people, I think. And, you know, at the end when the majority stand up and people will go, thank you, thank you. They're just reaching out going, thank you, you know. And that to me is a good 110 minutes worth of performing, you know. Like that's, you know, I hope that it does make people realize that we can be good. We are good. You know, as humans, we do have that capacity. Everybody has that capacity. If a little town in Gander, Newfoundland can do it, then we can all do it.
Exactly. You
know, we've all got that capacity.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Speaking of 2020 and the lockdowns, how did you go with dealing with kind of getting taken away from the show and getting taken away from work and everything like that? And how did you process those months off?
I think initially, you know, I think initially everybody was a bit kind of, woo, I'm going to do exercises and I'm going to bake bread and I'm going to, you know, I think everybody was sort of trying to see the fun side and the interesting side of it. And it also felt a little bit like normal in between gigs too, where when you're in between gigs, you don't go out much because you don't have the money. So you don't go out anyway. So just at home and waiting for the phone call to say, here's a gig coming or there's an audition. But the longer it went on and the stress of going, oh, money, what are we going to do? And then the understanding that dropped in that was like, oh, what we do is live. Yeah. What we do requires people to gather. This is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And it was just we could not project when or if we were ever going to get back. And then in September, so Melbourne was still kind of in semi-lockdown, I think, in September, and the second one, and that big one. And we got the news, I think in September, that we were going to be back in January in Melbourne. And I went, we won't. We so won't. You know, it just didn't seem... In Melbourne, you know, I was like, oh, see you in Brisbane. You know, like it's not going to happen. Like in my head, and maybe that was a protection thing, not to get too excited. Yeah. But as it got closer and then, you know, the new people started rehearsing, it's like, oh, maybe. And then we did a New Year's Eve sort of filming and I went, oh, maybe. And then we were there on the 2nd of January rehearsing and we just couldn't, I mean, we did lock down during the run, but we did it and people came to the, because that was the other thing, like we could rehearse it. But are people going to come? Are people going to feel confident in coming to a theatre and just sitting next to each other, granted with a mask? So there was so much, yeah, it's just like we don't know. So much don't knowness. I didn't, that's not even a word, I didn't really do much during that whole year. I was creatively really dry and I know a lot of people did some incredible work. But it sort of knocked me for six a little bit, I think. And it made me go, oh, is this what I really want to do when I grow up? Maybe I should do something else that if we have another pandemic, then I'm not going to be able to work, you know, like all of those things, which I wasn't alone in feeling like that. So what about you? How did you?
I was doing.
What did you do?
So I started a podcast with Six the Musical at the start of 2020.
Oh, right, right.
Lockdown kind of kicked that picked up because everybody was home. So I kind of
went
in my own little bubble doing podcasts and talking to people about a show and kind of recreating that moment. And we were going deep into things like characters and certain moments in shows. So it was kind of like reliving the show for an hour every week, which was great for me. And I was putting myself back in there. And then at the end of the year, I got to that point where I was like, exhausted. I was just like,
yeah, I bet.
I need to take a couple of months off and got everything ready. And that's where this show came from. I was like, cool. By that time, Frozen was open in Sydney. So I'd gone back to a theater and gotten that excitement back. And then I came down to see you guys in Melbourne. So it was a very weird time, like, because I was living in my own little bubble talking to people all over the world and creating this kind of little moment of yay, and then looking at the outer world and being like, because I got made redundant from my job and everything like that as well. Travel agent. So like, pretty much similar, like, oh my God, is this really what I'm gonna do? When's travel gonna be back? Like, what's going on? So like a similar thing, like obviously different industry, but very similar experience in a way. And that leads us perfectly into the next question. Getting back in the room with everybody.
Yes.
And getting those creative flows back together, knowing, cool, we're going back on stage, we're going to have an audience. What was that like, getting to pop that balloon?
I think when we first came back in the room, which was actually to rehearse the New Year's Eve, the John Foreman New Year's Eve telecast, which kind of came out of the blue, but we were doing Welcome to the Rock. And that day that we rehearsed, there were so many tears. Like, the moment we saw each other, the moment that we did the, we just, Luke, our musical director, he basically said, hey, how about we just sing it? See what happens, right? See what happens. And as soon as that boop-a-doop-a started, we just all went, I can't sing. Zoe Gertz was the worst. She was just like all the time. She's like, oh no, I'm off again. First time we got it on its feet. So there were a lot of firsts, right? And something was a little different this time around, you know, like particularly the theme of this show, which is about community. It's about doing for others instead of yourself, which is what we just come out of. Everybody, you know, people were doing things to make sure that we could all get back, you know, and it was with that sort of energy that was brought into the space. You know, my line in the show, one of my first lines is, that morning I'm in the classroom, it's our first day back. So, you know, the first audience that I did that to was pretty special, because the first audience was made up of a lot of returns from, you know, fans who were just like, I'm coming. So that first show was pretty special, really special. And it was a preview, but it doesn't really matter where it sits. It was really special. And we did a family and friends, which I think was 500 people as well. That was the day before the first preview. And Danny, our director, and Ricky, our choreographer from the US, they did a bit of a talk beforehand, and they'd done this. They'd written it down because they knew that they'd cry. And they did, because, of course, New York, when were they coming back? You know, we were the first. We were the first for a lot of these shows. It was really emotional. And because of that, it was kind of exhausting too, because we were just sort of like, oh my God. crying at this, crying at that, with gratitude though too, you know, absolute gratitude that we were there, and gratitude for, and because it was in Melbourne, which, sorry to the rest of Australia, but it's kind of come from way of spiritual home in a way, and, you know, having come out of that second lockdown and then back into performing, it just felt like the perfect place and time to do it. And yeah, so a lot of gratitude, because a lot of our friends weren't working and they didn't know when they were going to. So, yeah, it has a different feel now for sure. And it's that thing of being in the present and going, we don't know, we could get locked down tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Melbourne, maybe in one shortly, but we could. And so let's just enjoy the moment that we're in, you know. But, yeah, stepping back, I mean, our bodies were a bit like, what are you doing? You've been sitting for 7 months. What are you doing to me?
Yeah.
You want a what? Like, okay.
But it's only 110 minutes.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to see another chair in my life. Well, I've been sitting on one for 7 months and now I've got to move them. I don't understand. Yeah. So we were, it took us a little while to get show fit, but yeah, it was, a lot of firsts, which was, even though we'd done it before, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
One of my favorite character-to-character kind of interactions is the relationship between Beulah and Hannah.
Mm.
How did you go with Charisse and kind of work on that relationship, because it's one of the more pinnacle relationships, I think, in the show, that's underlying right until the very end. Find out what goes on. So delving into that side of things and having to make that connection and create that relationship on stage, what was that like?
Well, I mean, we connected off stage immediately anyway. It was just we both kind of not long into the first round of rehearsals, we were like, oh, yeah, we're going to get along, you know, and which I think was a great start, you know, like to have a great relationship off stage as well. But certainly the on stage, you know, there's a joke that she does at the end and I laugh and we hug. And I said to her recently when we came off, I said, that my laugh every show is genuine because you make me laugh. There's something, you every time it's a bit different and you do something and it just, I'm actually genuinely laughing at you. I'm not pretending to laugh, which, you know, 8 shows a week for this long is pretty cool that every time I'm just like, you know, oh, that's funny. Same line, everything, but there's just something about her. And also too, I mean, she's, I mean, I'm a mum and so I can kind of, I guess, I have empathy with Hannah, the character of Hannah too, and Beulah is as well. So I think that's where that comes from. And I think they meet their match in a way because Hannah is, she's strong, you know, she's trying to get through to talk to her son. And she has a go at Beulah and then Beulah's like, oh yeah, that was the wrong thing to do. But they kind of give as good as they get. Yeah. And I think it's that as mothers, these two characters connect on that level, yeah. You know, and I think that's at its core what it is. And they to this day are such good friends.
Yeah.
They're absolute, like the real Beulah and Hannah are just still incredibly, incredibly close friends. So I think that's where they kind of connect in those moments. But also personality-wise, they're still, they're a bit like a magnet, you know, when you put it the other way and it kind of goes and it doesn't quite meet, but it's still perfect, you know. It's such a great feeling, that, isn't it? It's that little, not quite, but then when you turn it, it goes snap together. So it's a little bit like that, you know.
I love that.
It was a beautiful thing to sort of work through with her as a mate anyway, to have those moments. So sometimes, you know, I'm not going to give anything away, but in that last moment, yeah, I find it very difficult to disconnect as Emma to what's happened.
But it gets me every time. And when you look like
every time
further into it, it's just like once you know the history behind it and what happened, you just like as well, after you see it like a second time and everything like that.
Yes.
As Beulah, what is your favorite moment in the show?
Oh, wow. So many. I have to say I love sitting and watching Colby Kindle do the Bob. I call them his stand-up routines because they kind of are, and he's so good and he's so funny. I just love sitting because at that point we're just sitting on stage watching and I just love it. I just love how he does it. I love what he does. Yeah, I love, you know, him, and he's just so good. I also really, really, really like Somewhere in the Middle of Nowhere when we're headed home.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful and kind of bittersweet too, you know, going home, but also that was an experience I don't ever want to forget, you know. So that's a really, really lovely moment. And I'm an animal lover, so Bonnie with her animals at the end is... love that.
Fantastic.
I think they're my favorite. Yeah. Hey.
It just, there's so many cool moments in this show, and
I know, right? It's hard. It's a hard question. Do you have any favorite moments in the show?
Screech In is just.
Oh yeah, that's fun.
As soon as that picks up, there's just so many. Like,
I know, right? It's a hard question.
I think my favorite thing about the show is the roller coaster of emotion. You go from being all excited to being put back in your seat and almost crying to being picked up again, and then going, like, you go from screeching to Me in the Sky, and it's just like, oh, okay, like, wow, emotion. And then you get to the end of the 110 when nearly as exhausted as you guys, because we're like, what am I supposed to be feeling right now? Like, oh my God. I think that's my favorite thing, is just how well the show flows, and it's not cutscene, cutscene, cutscene.
Do you know what I love about it is that, you know, in terms of theatrically, is it treats the audience with respect, because it says, okay, we're going to tell you a story. Now, some of it, most of it will be chronological, some won't. We're going to do it this way, and then we're going to do it this way. And it says to the audience, we know you're going to come with us. We know you can, right? We're not going to spoon feed you.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you get on the ride, and we want you to not participate, that's the wrong word, because there is no audience participation, but, you know, it really just does say to the audience, we, you know, we got you, you got us, let's go. You know, it's a relationship, and that's what I love about it, is that and people don't get lost.
Yeah, exactly. That's what either. I was like, you don't need
clear
in a way that you don't need a blackout to process that scene. Like,
no,
you can go from one scene to the next back to back and not need that 30, 40 seconds to be like, oh my God, that was.
Yeah.
Like, it's just very surface level, easy to follow, really nice to pick up on,
but it's doing something as well at the same time.
So dynamic.
And I think that's the beauty of it. And also, the audience is kind of feeling what happened then, because, you know, they went for 5 days straight with very little sleep.
Yeah.
So the show goes. So you have that effect of, that's why it's great that it's one act, because it doesn't stop. So it doesn't stop, and there's very few moments in the. There's only three applause moments, you know, for that reason as well. Because it's like, no, we're going, we're making toast, we're giving the person some clothes, we're putting someone up in our house, we're checking on the thing. Oh, there's a baby over here. Oh, okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's that sense, and we feel that on stage too. Like, it's that one to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next, and then at the end, when we sing to you, you are here at the start of a moment, we are like passing the baton to you, to the audience. It's like, we've told our part of the story, over to you.
Yeah.
When have you had to do this? Do you know, this is your, we're going to give you this sort of, we've given you our experience, and now it's yours,
yeah.
You know? And I think that's why we get the response. As we go back to our conversation about the responses, is that there is an absolute relationship with the audience. They are the other character in the room, you know. They are just as much a character as Chair 7, you know, like, or as we are, you know. And it's that invisible umbilical that you can feel with an audience too.
Yeah.
You just know, you go, like, we'll come off from a show and go, oh, or during a show and go, that, you can just feel it, just feel that
energy, like,
yeah, that elastic that's joining us together. Yeah,
yeah. So I love lovely. Well, Emma, that brings us to the end of the episode.
Oh no. Thank you
for joining us. Guys,
you're welcome.
If you haven't seen Coming for Fight, or even if you have, it doesn't matter.
Go back
exactly. What date do you guys start? Is it June 8th?
10th, we open. Yeah. And the 3rd is our first Sydney show. It's a preview, but it's our first Sydney show. And we've been trying for a year to get there. So,
and in the one,
please come.
Theater, so, like,
yeah, beautiful
venue. It's going to be a really cool vibe. I know there's the triple B seats in, so there's going to be no orchestra pit. So it's going to be like pretty much sitting on top of the stage if you're down the front. But it doesn't matter where you are, guys, you're going to have a wonderful experience. So make sure you head to comefromaway.com.au/tickets right now to purchase your tickets and get there. I'm going to be there multiple times, so if you see me,
yay.
Hi. But we will be sharing this story this week and next week. We've got Alana Traynor coming on next week to talk from a stand perspective. We're back in Gander, and I could not be more excited. To wrap things up, Emma, for anyone sitting on the edge of their seat being like, oh, 9/11 musical, if we haven't convinced them by this point, what's your final sales pitch to those people?
Okay, good question. I want to say you won't be disappointed, but that doesn't cover it at all. I think particularly with what we're going through now, I feel like if you want your heart to be touched and to have a good old laugh as well, come. If you want to have an experience, a live experience with this beautiful story, come see it. Come see it. You won't regret it. You won't. You 100% won't regret it. Money's worth.
100% agree. And guys, that is where we're going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you for joining us. And we will be back next week with a brand new episode of the We Are Theatre podcast. Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.